right, folks, we're back. Second hour of the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. We have Tom Lacovara's significant other on the line here. Okay, so, Lori, as you were saying, it's good for the Patriots to go there, but they need to bone up a little bit on the law so they can know the law and recite it to the authorities. Is that what you're saying?
Absolutely. They're not reading the rules of court. They're not reading the congressional acts that set the courts up. They're not reading the job duties of these people. Not one of them knows Rule 9, where you can stand up and be a natural person. When they didn't allow the Constitution in, I went and did some research and said, well, how can we pull it in? Well, by the rules of evidence under local rules and by the rules of the judicial for the district court, the first litmus test they have to go through is it constitutional? Therefore, if the evidence is constitutional, then the Constitution is allowed in the courtroom and they should have rebutted the judge's presumption. Unless you do that, then you don't have any legs to stand on. Instead of whining, let's go out there and get educated and fight back the right way. So this is the frustration I'm having up here, is dealing with people that won't listen. Hey, why won't it happen? And I'm literally defending these judges. I'm literally up here defending the judges and the attorneys. And it's a sad state.
Well, that can't be a good feeling that, you know, these judges are in control of your significant other, and you're up there defending their position as opposed to the people that are coming up there trying to support him. Okay, so at this stage of the game, the people that you're speaking of, are there people that are up there, camping out in Tom's locale as well?
No, I'm by myself up here with Tom. Our area, and I'm up in the Eugene area. And most people are in Portland or down in Las Vegas, and right now they need to be down in Las Vegas. It's the high profile where they need to be. What the government's doing right now is they're doing it with New Orleans, and they're doing it with Las Vegas. New Orleans is the case where they have the statue that Antifa is trying to tear down. They're running your money out. What they're doing is they're draining your money. Keep running back and forth, and they're dieseling you, is what they call it in the jail system. Is running you back and forth to waste your money and all your funds and resources. And fortunately for the people that are the P3 or the Patriots, they have plenty of places to stay, and they all carpool now. So they're not really wasting a lot of money or funds to do this. But it does take resources to do this. You've got to eat away from home, and it does take gas. But I really think that someone needs to address how they're being played and look at the psychological game that's going on and look at the Abu Ghraib prisons and what they did there. They did the same things to the Iraqis and to the prisoners of war. If you look at the actual legislation for this, that's they're detainees. They are prisoners of war through the, Trading with the Enemies Act. They're not American citizens. They're enemies of the state. All of them.
Well, let me ask you this question, because I broadcast a phone call that Ammon Bundy put out over the airwaves, and I know the treatment that they put on Ammon Bundy here, putting him in solitary confinement. Is Tom being treated okay, or he's not going through the same thing they are? Is he?
No, because I'm not being very nice to anybody in the situation, including Tom, and that is making it a little easier for him. And I hate doing that, but what I'm doing is a little different, because I'm not going to be going through the diesel therapy. I don't have the money for it, and I don't have the patience for it, and I'm not going to play their games. They all went up to Oregon, and this is how it is, and this court is a little bit different the way I'm handling it, because I'm not playing that game. I won't. I've watched enough court cases and riots and all of this stuff since 2008. You're not dealing with your average woman here. I'm not.
Well, I could tell that in 10 minutes on the phone with you, girl. Anyway, go ahead. I didn't mean to cut you off.
No, that's okay. It's just Texans don't play that way, and you're not going to hear me whining unless I really have to whine. So Thomas is okay. I just got off the phone with him. He's fine. He's doing what he has to do, and his lawyer's not working with me, which go figure. His lawyer doesn't like me too well, because I do recite acts of Congress and ask him to go and get information for me that he has refused at every step. I've asked him to help me put paperwork in. He's refused at every step. So I'm going to have to do things that are quite scary, put my life on the line for these idiots that went up to Oregon, and that's how I personally feel. You can feel how you want to. And take care of business for my family. And, you know, they're not only putting themselves and their family on the line, they're putting people on the line that didn't agree with the way they did things in Oregon. But this has to be done because it's an injustice. So I'm here.
Now, is he's still supposed to go on trial May the 15th, correct?
I think they've changed that. I'll have to get the new date for you.
Okay, well, let me say this. Because when Eric had originally told me that he was scheduled for trial May the 15th, I predicted that they were going to delay it again. And I wanted to find out if they did?
They did delay it again. Yes, I know he's got a status hearing Monday. I'm not sure when the exact trial date is. The attorney was supposed to get back with me, and I didn't have time to call the courts. By the time I get up, I hit the research, and then time gets away from me. But if people sit and put their heads down and start researching the actual acts, the actual statutes, the actual court cases, the actual rules, you're going to find out you do have room to stand if you actually know them and you're respectful to the judges. I got on to Judge Anna Brown for having guns in the courtroom and pointing them the wrong way in court. The next day she got on to people. You know, I wasn't very nice getting on to her. I got on to her through her clerk, which was appropriate, after court. And I waited, and then the next day she corrected it, and I went and thanked her. You have an honor system. You've got to do things. And she did everything quite properly. I didn't have a problem with her when she corrects it. You have to give them a chance to correct it. And people aren't doing things the way they need to and learning how to dance. You got to learn how to dance in order to do this. And that's the biggest problem I see up here is people just won't educate themselves. They get stuck in the sovereign citizen crap. And if you're going to spout that stuff off, you better have the congressional records to back you up where you're not spouting off crap. You're spouting off facts. Because where did the courts get their power? Do you know?
Do I know where they got their power?
Absolutely.
The Act of 1871?
That, and also, well, the Judiciary Act, but also through the Constitution, via Congress, via the Supreme Court. So if you actually know the path, then you know where to go to get the records and to see what they have to abide by, what controls them, and what gives them power. And if you quote from the facts above their power, then you have standing.
Well, it sounds like you should be his attorney, Lori. But unfortunately, in their system, that is not the way it works. And I had mentioned to Eric that with a public defender, you know, the public defender isn't going to deal with you because he's an officer of the court. You know that.
No, the public defender is not really it. What they've all done, and I've actually seen the paperwork, is they've all accepted that they're that entity that the sovereigns talk about. It's real. They've accepted they're the entity, and they're trying them as the entity. They've said, hey, I'm Walmart, so go ahead and do it with me what you want. And I've seen the paperwork. So, you know, you've got to separate yourself from the entity. And that is real. And through congressional records, that is real.
Okay, so this, when Tom goes on trial, okay, I mean, you're putting forth this information. Are you trying to put this forth this information to the public defender? Is that correct, or are you in communication with Tom? Tom's as knowledgeable as you are in this. I'm sure. Yes.
Not quite. No.
No.
He was on the 14th Amendment. What I'm going to have to do is get this to the judge somehow, and I've got a way to do it. But I'm going to have to get it to the judge, and she's going to have to accept it. And that's where paperwork's been getting kicked back. And I've got some people helping me on that. And I've got to make sure it's quite proper so that I'm not being offensive or terroristic to the court. So
let me correct me if I'm wrong, but what you're basically saying is you're having a problem with the proper way to present motions. Is that right?
To the court. It's going to have to go to the judge. It can't go to the prosecutor or the attorney because they are they're little knuckleheads. Let me put it that way.
Okay, that's no surprise.
Yeah.
Okay. All right, that said, anything else that you want to add, dear?
That's all. I just wanted to make sure you knew what was going on with the P3 and what was going up on up at the jail, that they were not letting them have visitors up there, so they're punishing every prisoner in that prison. There's a capacity for 1,000, and there's supposed to be at all times at least 750 there. Okay. They've pulled in the sheriff. The sheriff's not going to do anything, so they must have a memorandum of understanding, and no one's gone to look to see if there's a memorandum of understanding for a chain of command with that facility. This is what I'm talking about. People need to research. And if we can start getting the information out to do a little bit more research and where to look, maybe we can start making some changes in the country, and I hope this helps somebody else out that has someone in jail.
Well, Laurie, where it stands now, I want to get a clear collective picture on this. These people that are coming up to Las Vegas in support of the Bundys, okay, you're saying that the prison has locked down any visitation from anybody, right? Because of that, and so they're trying to turn the prison system against, or the prison, the inmates against the Bundys.
Psychologically, that's what they usually do. Yes, that's how it works.
Boy, I tell you what, that's a slippery slope. You know that? Because, well, I mean, with the treatment that Ammon just reported about the guards themselves, but you've got the guards and you've got the prisoners, and so it's not a good place to be.
Well, they also, and sorry about the phone in the background, they also had told Pete Santilli, when he had asked a couple of questions, to file a report. And he asked, do you want me to have all the men in this group file the report? And the guard said, yes, but I'm going to file charges against you for insurrection. So they're also threatening them.
Okay. Well, if that's it, I'll let you go. But do me a favor, anytime there's any updates on it, feel free to call in, okay?
Thank you, and you're doing a good job, by the way. Thank you.
Well, thank you, and I'm sure you know, and John Stadtmiller has said publicly on the airwaves that, you know, when time gets up, because I've already made a prediction about this, I don't believe it's going to trial. I believe they'll drop the charges before there's a jury trial, and I told Eric Jones that. I went through a similar thing with Susan Lindauer, and she was on my show at least 20 times while she was going through this with the feds, and my prediction was exactly right with her. Eric Jones, I had him up on her show 2 weeks ago. So my prediction is just before the trial, which they have extended, which I already predicted that as well, they're going to drop the charges and let him walk out, because I've examined it. They don't have a case, Lori.
I don't think they're going to do that. I've just seen too much, and I know what's behind it. And I've sat in court and heard the ex-head of the FBI of this case say, we're going to take everybody down that was involved in it.
Okay, so, opening that up for just a moment. Because I couldn't get an answer out of Eric. He didn't know. Where specifically was the gun in Tom's room?
It was in a bathroom, from what I understand.
Okay. And Tom was not aware it was there?
Yes.
Yes, he was, or yes, he wasn't?
He was in the room.
Right, but he wasn't aware that the gun was in the bathroom, wherever it was.
I don't know. I wasn't there, and when he came back and asked any questions, because I didn't want to know anything about it, because I knew it was quote, honeypot for the FBI,
right.
And I did not want him to go to Oregon in the first place. So anybody that thinks I'm being ugly, I'm not. I just really, the whole time, did not like what was going on. By my actions, I'm up here helping everybody. I've been to the court cases. I've tried to give them information. I've tried to help them. I'm not being ugly and hateful. What you're hearing right now is researching all day, and I'm just really tired of trying to get people to listen that are hard-headed. And we all know, knowing a lot of information, it takes a while to get to them, but it's just a day of frustration today.
Well, you keep going, girl. You sound like you've got the tenacity to get it done.
We'll see if I can. Keep praying for me, and I'm doing okay. I'm safe and warm and dry for those guys that are worried, that have helped me out. I'm safe, warm, and dry right now, and stable, so I can do the research. So thank you guys for all that you guys have done, and the prayers, I can feel them. They help.
Okay. Keep us posted. Thank you for coming on.
All thank right. you. Here,
okay,
bye.
That's Lori, Tom's significant others. Wow. I mean, look at this. I mean, all for what? You know, and folks, I've gone through this before. I went through this with Susan Lindauer. I went through it with Randy Weaver. I went through it with Ed and Elaine Brown. You know, and I have to tell you, it's taxing, because I get emotionally involved in this only because I have been up close and personal with players in the game. And I know emotionally, I can feel emotionally what Ammon Bundy's going through. I can feel emotionally what Laurie is going through. And it, you just, there's a feeling, a little bit of helplessness, if you know what I mean. That's why I do what I can do, which isn't much, but you know, they've got an audience with me anytime they want. So that said, let's shift gears here and get back into the Holocaust, which seems like a moot point at this time. But I'm going to go there anyway because that's my show tonight. So here we go. So anyway, I don't remember where I left off here. Verba later became a British citizen and published his autobiography under the title of I Cannot Forgive. This book was published in 1964 and was actually written by Alec Bestek, who, in his preface, testified to the considerable care by Rudolf Verba for each detail and to the meticulous and almost fanatic respect he received for accuracy. And on November 30th, 1964, Verba testified at the Frankfurt Auschwitz trial. Then he settled in Canada and became a Canadian citizen. He has been featured in various films about Auschwitz, particularly Shoah by Claude Lanzmann. Everything went well for him until the day at the Zundel trial in 1985 when he was cross-examined mercilessly by guess who? He was then shown to be an imposter. It was revealed that he had completely made up the number and location of the gas chambers and the crematories in his famous 1944 report, and his 1964 book opened with a purported January 1943 visit by Himmler to Birkenau to inaugurate a new crematorium with a gas chamber. Now, actually, the last visit by Himmler to Auschwitz took place in July of 1942. And in January 1943, the first of the new crematories was still far from finished. Thanks, apparently, to some special gift of memory that he called special mnemonic principles or special mnemonical method, and to a real talent for being everywhere at once, Verba had calculated that in the space of 25 months, and that's from April of 1942 to April of 1944, the Germans had gassed 1,765,000 Jews at Birkenau alone, including 150,000 Jews from France. But in 1978, Serge Klarsfeld, in his memorial to the deportation of the Jews from France, had been forced to conclude that for the entire length of the war, the Germans had deported a total of 75,721 Jews from France to all their concentration camps. The gravest aspect of this is that the figure of 1.765 million Jews gassed at Birkenau had also been used in the document L022 at the main Nuremberg trial. Attacked on all sides by Zundel's lawyer, the tenacious Doug Christie, the impostor had no other recourse than to invoke, in Latin, the licentia potarum, or poetic license, in other words, the right to engage in fiction. His book has just been published in France in 1987. This edition is presented by a book by Rudolf Verba with Alan Bestek. It no longer includes the enthusiastic preface by Alan Bestek, and the short introduction by Emil Kopferman notes that, with the approval of Rudolf Verba, the two appendices from the English edition have been removed. Nothing is said about the fact that those two appendices have also caused Verba serious problems in 1985 at the Toronto trial. Isn't that wonderful? We'll go to a break and I'll open the phone lines, 800-313-9443. Feel free to call in with a question or maybe an answer. We'll be right back on the other side. Stay with us.
The new word on the street is bloated. Yeah, you eat this food, GMO, herbicide, pesticide, foods aren't safe anymore. And then we eat them, and we're bloated. Our stomach says, no, no, no more, Seymour. So what we have to do is drink the tea. Are you on the tea? GetTheTea.com. That's GetTheTea.com. Super strength tea. It will help you with the new word, bloated. You can get it today. Log on to GetTheTea.com.
So, you love talk radio, then you'll love TalkStreamLive.com. TalkStream Live is always on, 24-7, with the best streaming talk shows. Find your favorite talkers and discover some new ones. It's free, readily available online or on mobile with any smartphone or tablet. Finding your favorite talk shows all in one place has gotten a whole lot easier. Just go to TalkStreamLive.com. Be sure to download the free apps from Google Play or the iTunes App Store.
It's time for you to have your own custom smartphone app for your business and pay way less than you can imagine. Introducing the I Can Get To Silent Salesman mobile marketing app, a global mobile marketing and communication tool for your business. Go to appsapart.com and learn how you could earn up to $36,351 or more per month just by inviting two people or less into a $14.95 per month program. Go to appsapart.com and be sure to watch the video at the top of the site and listen to the audio message from the CEO near the bottom. This is something you won't want to miss. Go to appsapart.com now or call 646-860-9540. That's 646-860-9540. Get the I Can Get To. That's ICANGET, the number 2, Silent Salesman app at appsapart.com. That's appsapart.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magpul clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you from the Valley of the Sun. Boy, this has been an action-packed show tonight. Got an update from Ammon Bundy. Got an update from Lori, Tom's significant other. I almost feel like I'm there. I almost wish I was there. But, you know, when she's talking about all of us being, you know, up to speed on all of the intricacies of dealing with the court system, does that mean we would have to go to school and take court one and two before we even went up there and participated in the support of them? Geez, I don't know. I guess the best thing we could all do, folks, if you don't want to go up there, is just pray for them. Back to this. Now, in 1985, Doug Christie, Ernst Zundel's lawyer, literally carved up every witness for the prosecution, okay, and made them look like fools. So the question I have, going back to square one, did 6 million pass away at Auschwitz or in prison camps, or were they gassed or not? Now, the evidence that I'm seeing here, and I would love to see the other side. As I mentioned before, just when I first started the show tonight, I watched a 2.5 minute clip about this lady that came on, and she was telling me that if I was a Holocaust denier, which I never said I was, that I was anti-Semitic. Well, do I have to believe in the Holocaust to not be anti-Semitic? Is that their position? Because basically every witness that has come on here and made the allegation or the accusation that the Germans actually gassed these people was discredited. It was proven that they lied, even in their books. So if that isn't evidence for the other side to go throw their hands up in the air and go, okay, you got us, we lied, No, they're not going to do that because this has turned into almost a religion. And they get money every year. What is it, $6 billion the United States government gives to Israel? And I think the German government is still paying reparations. Am I wrong there? I'm not sure. Okay, but then we go to the second trial in 1988 because in January of 1987, a five-judge appeals court, well, they decided to throw out the 1985 verdict against Ernst Zundel for some very basic reasons. Judge Hugh Locke had not allowed the defense any influence in the jury selection process, and the jury had been misled by the judge on the very meaning of the trial. Now, attending many trials, including some carried out in France during the period of the Purge at the end of and after World War II, and this is the writer speaking here, he says, "Never have I encountered a judge so partial, so autocratic, and violent as Judge Hugh Locke. Anglo-Saxon law offers many more guarantees than French law, but it's so partial, but it only takes one man to pervert the best of systems, and Judge Locke was such a man." Now, the second trial began on January 18th, 1988, under the direction of Judge Ronald Thomas, who was a friend, it seems, of Judge Locke. Of course, backslapping golf buddies. Can you visualize it now, folks? Judge Thomas was often angry and was frankly hostile to the defense. But he had more finesse than his predecessor. The ruling by the five-judge panel court also inhibited him somewhat. Judge Hugh Locke had imposed numerous restrictions on free expression by the witnesses and experts for the defense. For example, he forbade the use of any of the photos that had been taken at Auschwitz. Says, "I had no right to use arguments of a chemical, cartographical, or architectural nature, even though I had been the first person in the world to publish the plans for the Auschwitz and Birkenau crematories. I was not allowed to talk about either the American gas chambers or the aerial reconnaissance photos of Auschwitz and Birkenau. Even the testimony of the eminent chemist William Lindsay was cut short." Judge Ronald Thomas did allow the defense more freedom, but at the outset of the trial, he made a decision at the request of, guess who, the prosecution, that would tie the hands of the jury. Now, guess who refused to appear again? Raoul Hilberg. One misfortune awaited prosecutor John Pearson, Raoul Hilberg. In spite of repeated requests, Raoul refused to appear again. The defense, having heard rumors of an exchange of correspondence between Pearson and Hilberg, demanded and got the publication of the letters they exchanged, and in particular of the confidential letter by Hilberg, which did not hide the fact that he had some bitter memories of his cross-examination in 1985. In short, he remembered Doug Christie, folks. All right, we're taking the bottom of the hour break. I'll be back at 3. Michael Herzog, The American Awakening, and I'll continue with this. See you on the other side.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Extendivite is more than just a heart tonic. Most basic diseases are caused by yeast in the gut and metals in the liver, and we all have a bit of both. The garlic in Extendivite has a yeast-killing effect in the gut while also helping the sulfur enzyme in the liver get rid of the metals. Extendivite just may improve your overall health. Products like Extendivite are the only way we are going to get our society healthy. And if you're waiting for the government and pharmaceutical care to solve your health problems, you're going to have a long, disappointing wait, I think. Extendivite is a complete formula for extended life in the new millennium. 80 can be the new 60. Extendivite is available in capsule or liquid form for just $69.95 for a two-month supply. To get started, call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite. Are you still looking for that one iodine that you can really trust? A medical doctor-endorsed product that is backed by honest research and true integrative science? Then search no further. Go to NutraMedical.com for Dr. Bill Deagle's Nutriodine, proven time and time again to be the very best iodine available for you. Nutriodine is the only Tesla-activated monatomic plasma iodine in the world. It optimizes mitochondrial function and generation of new mitochondria, from totally neutralizing the venom from a desert recluse spider bite in Southern California to eliminating malaria parasites reported by medical missionaries in Central India. Dr. Bill's Nutriodine is simply the most powerful healing formula there is. Nutriodine clears the body of all known pathogens, restores it to an alkaline state, and even promote stem cell regeneration. Order Dr. Bill's Nutriodine today at 888-212-8871 or visit us online at NutraMedical.com.
You've probably heard about all the great benefits of goat milk soap. But did you know? Some companies take shortcuts. At Old New England Soap, we make our organic goat's milk soap using 36% goat's milk. That's 17% more than most others. Our bars are larger, so they last longer, producing lots of lather packed with vitamins. And our soap is a natural moisturizer that smooths dry and damaged skin. Order online at oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. You've tried the rest. Now try the best. Oldnesoap.com.
Water-based soaps on supermarket shelves use harsh chemical acids to break down dead skin cells. And that's just not good for you. At Old New England Soap, our soaps are made without chemical ingredients, contain no alcohol or petroleum products, and use 85% organic materials and carry the USDA's organic certification. Try some today. Go to oldnesoap.com. That's oldnesoap.com. Oldnesoap.com.
Homeowners, if your lender has gone out of business or sold your transaction to another lender or servicer, you may be the victim of a wrongful foreclosure resulting in the loss of your home. If you've already lost your home, are in foreclosure, or even in good standing, you can challenge the mortgage transaction's illegal issue and your property can be restored to you, and your foreclosure can be stopped or reversed and the mortgage transaction declared unenforceable. State laws, U.S. title codes, the Uniform Commercial Codes, and U.S. Supreme Court rulings have upheld that defective mortgage documentations can reverse or stop foreclosures and enforce property title claims in favor of the homeowner. We are having successes in stopping the process of foreclosure, the enforcement of the foreclosure judgments, the sale of property, and evictions after the sale. We are not attorneys, and we don't give legal advice. We are a professional team of legal researchers, providing forensic mortgage audits and expert witnesses. We have the knowledge to produce the evidence and enforce laws regarding your legal issues. We've been in business for 12 years without a complaint. Consultations are free, and we provide a free title search to confirm if your mortgage has legal defects. Please call 855-253-3748. 855-2, keep it today.
All right, folks, we're back with the American Awakening. Michael Herzog, your host, coming to you live from the Valley of the Sun. And yes, Raoul Hilberg refused to appear again because Raoul Hilberg had some bitter memories of his cross-examination in 1985 by the tenacious Doug Christie. He feared being questioned again by Doug Christie on those same points. And to quote the exact words of his confidential letter, Hilberg wrote that he feared every attempt to entrap him by pointing out any seeming contradiction, however trivial the subject might be, between my earlier testimony and the answer that I might give in 1988, unquote. In fact, as I have already mentioned, Hilberg had committed perjury, and he may have feared being charged with that crime. So, instead of him, his buddy, Christopher Browning, decides that in place of Hilberg, Christopher Browning pops in. Now, Christopher is an American professor who specializes in the Holocaust. Admitted as an expert witness and paid for several days at the rate of $150 an hour by the Canadian taxpayers, Browning tried to prove that the Harwood pamphlet was a tissue of lies and that the attempt to exterminate the Jews was a scientifically established fact. He had cause to regret the experience, unfortunately. He had no idea because he hadn't met Doug Christie yet. During cross-examination, the defense used his own arguments to destroy him. In the course of those days, People saw the tall and naive professor who had strutted while he stood testifying, seated, shrunken in size, behind the witness stand like a schoolboy caught in a mistake. With a faint and submissive voice, he ended up acknowledging that the trial had definitely taught him something about historical research. Now, following the example of Raoul Hilberg, Browning had not examined any concentration camps. He had not visited any facility with gas chambers. He had never thought of asking for an expert study of the weapon of the crime. And in his writings, he had made much of homicidal gas vans. But he was not able to refer to any authentic photograph. No plan, no technical study, or any expert study. He was not aware that German words like Gaswagen and Spezialwagen and Endlichwagen, it was a delousing van, could have perfectly innocent meanings. His technical understanding was nil. He had never examined the wartime aerial reconnaissance photos of Auschwitz. He was unaware of all the tortures undergone by Germans, such as Rudolf Hess, who had spoken of gassings. He knew nothing of the doubts expressed by some of Himmler's speeches or about the Goebbels diary. A great follower of the trials of war criminals, Browning had only questioned the prosecutors, never the defense lawyers. His ignorance of the transcript of the Nuremberg trial was disconcerting. He had not even read what Hans Frank, the former Governor General of Poland, had said before the Nuremberg Tribunal about his diary and about the extermination of the Jews. That was inexcusable. As a matter of fact, Browning claimed to have found irrefutable proof of the existence of policy of exterminating the Jews in the Frank diary. He had discovered one incriminating sentence. He did not know that Frank had given the tribunal an explanation of that kind of sentence, chosen beforehand from the hundreds of thousands of diaries to the Americans when they came to arrest him. The sincerity of the former governor general is so obvious to anyone who reads his deposition that Christopher Browning, invited to hear the content, did not raise the least objection. And one last humiliation awaited him. For the sake of his thesis, he invoked a passage from the well-known protocol of the Wannsee Conference of 20th of January 1942. He had made his own translation of the passage, a translation that was seriously in error. And at that point, his thesis collapsed. Finally, his own personal explanation of a policy of the extermination of the Jews was the same as Hilberg's. Everything was explained by the nod of Adolf Hitler. In other words, the Führer of the German people did not need to give any written or even spoken order for the extermination of the Jews. It was enough for him to give a nod at the beginning of the operation, for the rest, a series of signals, and that was understood. Not only that, but there was no survivor witnesses for the prosecution. The judge asked the prosecutor if he would call any survivors to the witness stand. The prosecutor answered no. The experience of 1985 had been too embarrassing. The cross-examination had been devastating. It is regrettable that at the trial of Klaus Barbie in France of 1987 and at the trial of John Demjanjuk in Israel in 1987 and 88, no defense lawyer has followed Douglas Christie's example in the first Zundel trial in 1985. Christie had shown that by carefully questioning witnesses about the gassing process itself, one could destroy the very foundation of the extermination camp myth. Now, the witnesses and experts for the defense? Well, let me tell you. Most of the witnesses and experts for the defense were as precise and concrete as people like Hilberg or Browning had been, imprecise and metaphysical. The Swede Ditlieb Felderer showed about 380 slides of Auschwitz and of the other camps in Poland, and the American Mark Weber, who I've had on my show many times, whose knowledge of the documents is impressive, engaged in clarification of several aspects of the Holocaust, in particular the Einsatzgruppen. The German Judar Rudolph dealt with the Lodz ghetto and visits to the ICRC delegates. And at the end of 1941, to Auschwitz, Majdanek, and other camps, Thies Christopherson had been in charge of an agricultural research enterprise in the Auschwitz region in 1944. He visited the Birkenau camp several times to requisition personnel there and never noticed the horrors usually described. And on the witness stand, he repeated point by point what he had written about the camp, starting in 1973 with a 19-page report. The Australian-born Canadian Maria van Hanvarden was interned at Birkenau starting in 1942. She saw nothing, either close up or from a distance, that resembled mass murder. Although she confirmed that many of the inmates had died of typhus, the American Bradley Smith, a member of the Committee for Open Debate on the Holocaust, spoke about his experience in more than 100 question and answer interviews on American radio and television on the Holocaust issue. The Austrian Emil Lackaut commented on the famous Mueller document, which since December of 1987 has thrown the Austrian authorities into disarray. The document, dated October 1, 1948, revealed that even then, Allied commissions of inquiry had already rejected the stories of homicidal gassings in a whole series of camps, including Dachau, Ravensbrück, Stutthof, Nansweiler, and Stutthof-Danzig. Sachsenhausen and Mauthausen, Austria, the document specifically confirms that confessions of Germans had been extorted by torture and that testimonies by former inmates were indeed false. Dr. Russell Barton recounted his horrified discovery of the camp at Bergen-Belsen at the time of liberation. Until that moment, he had believed in a deliberate program of extermination. Then he noted the fact that in an apocalyptic Germany, the piles of corpses and the walking skeletons were the result of the frightful conditions of an overcrowded camp, ravaged by epidemics and almost entirely deprived of medicine, food, and water because of the Allied bombings. The German Udo Wallende outlined the many forgeries he had discovered in wartime atrocity photographs and other documents, either altered or forged by a team headed by the British propagandist called Sefton Delmer. J.G. Berg, a Jew who lives in Munich, told of his experiences in a war and confirmed that there had never been any policy for extermination of the Jews by the Nazis. Academics like the Chinese professor Dr. K.T. Fan, a Marxist, and Dr. Gary Botting, who lost his teaching position at Red Deer College in Alberta as a result of testifying at the Zundel trial in 1985, testified that the Harwood booklet was essentially a work of opinion and hence not subject to legal prohibition. Jürgen Neumann, a close associate and friend of Zundel, testified as to Zundel's state of mind when the booklet first was published. Ernst Nielsen testified on the obstacles he encountered at the University of Toronto to open research on the Holocaust. Ivan Legassi, director of the crematory at Calgary, demonstrated the practical impossibility of the numbers alleged by Hilberg to have been cremated at Auschwitz. For my part, I appeared as an expert, this writer says, an expert witness for nearly 6 days. I concentrated particularly on my investigation of the American gas chambers. I recalled that Zyklon B is essentially hydrocyanic acid and that it is with this gas that certain American penitentiaries execute those who have been condemned to death. In 1945, the Allies should have asked specialists on American gas chambers to examine the buildings at Auschwitz and elsewhere, which were supposed to have been used to gas millions of people. Since 1977, I have had the following ideas. When one deals with a vast historical problem like that of the reality or the legend of the Holocaust, one must strive to get to the core of the problem. In this case, the central problem is Auschwitz, and the core of that problem is the space of 275 square meters. The 65 square meters of the gas chamber of crematorium I at Auschwitz and at Birkenau, and the 210 square meters of the gas chamber of crematorium II. In 1988, my idea remained the same. Let us have expert studies of these 275 square meters, and we will have an answer to the vast problem of the Holocaust. I showed the jury my photos of the gas chamber at the Maryland State Penitentiary in Baltimore, as well as my plans for the Auschwitz gas chambers, and I underlined the physical and chemical impossibilities of the latter ones. There were no survivor witnesses for the prosecution. The judge asked the prosecutor if he would call any survivors to the witness stand, and the prosecutor answered no. Now we get to the good part, folks. The sensational turn of events, the Leuchter Report. Ernst Sundel, in possession of the correspondence I had exchanged in 77 and 78 with the six American penitentiaries outfitted with gas chambers, gave attorney Barbara Kulaska the job of getting in touch with the chief wardens of those penitentiaries in order to see if one of them would agree to appear in court and explain how a real gas chamber operates. Bill Armentrout, the chief warden of the penitentiary at Jefferson City, Missouri, agreed to testify, and in doing so pointed out that no one in the USA was no more knowledgeable about the functioning of gas chambers than Fred Leuchter, an engineer from Boston. I went to visit Leuchter on February 3rd and 4th of 1988. I found that he had never asked himself any question about the gas chambers in the German camps. He had simply believed in their existence. And after I began to show him my files, he became aware of the chemical and physical impossibility of the German gassings and agreed to examine the documents in Toronto. After that, at Zundel's expense, he left for Poland with a secretary, his wife, a draftsman, a video cameraman, and an interpreter. He came back and drew up a 192-page report, including appendices. He also brought back 32 samples taken, on the one hand, from the crematories of Auschwitz and Birkenau at the site of the homicidal gassings, and, on the other hand, in a disinfection gas chamber at Birkenau. His conclusion was simple. There had never been any homicidal gassings at Auschwitz, Birkenau, or Majdanek. On April 20th and 21st, 1988, Fred Leuchter appeared on the witness stand in the Toronto courtroom. He told the story of his investigation and presented his conclusions. And he said, "I am convinced that during those 2 days, as an eyewitness to the death of the gas chamber myth, a myth which, in my opinion, had entered its dead throes at the Sorbonne Colloquium in Nazi Germany and the extermination of the Jews, June 29th to July 2nd, 1982, where the organizers themselves began to grasp that there was no proof of the existence of gas chambers." In the Toronto courtroom, emotions were intense. In particular, among the friends of Sabine Citron, Ernst Sundel's friends were also moved, but for a different reason. They were witnessing the veil of the great swindle being torn away. As for me, I felt both relief and melancholy. Relief because a thesis that I had defended for so many years was at last fully confirmed, and melancholy because I had fathered the idea in the first place. I had even, with the clumsiness of a man of letters, presented physical, chemical, topographical, and architectural arguments, which I now saw summed up by a scientist who was astonishingly precise and thorough. Would people one day remember the skepticism I had encountered? Even from other revisionists, just before Fred Leuchter, Bill Armentrout had been on the witness stand, where he confirmed in every detail what I had said to the jury about the extreme difficulties of a homicidal gassing, not to be confused with a suicidal or accidental gassing. Ken Wilson, a specialist in aerial photographs, had shown that the homicidal gas chambers of Auschwitz and Birkenau did not have gas evacuation chimneys, which would have been indispensable. He also showed that I had been right in accusing Serge Klarsfeld and Jean-Claude Prezak of falsifying the map of Birkenau in the Auschwitz album. those authors, in order to make the reader believe that groups of Jewish women and children surprised by the photographer between crematories 2 and 3 could not go any further and were thus going to end up in the gas chambers and those crematories. He simply eliminated from the map the path which in reality led up to the Zentralzone. It was not a gas chamber, but a large shower facility located beyond the zone of the crematories, where those women and children were actually going. James Roth, the director of the laboratory in Massachusetts, then testified on the analysis of the 32 samples, the origin, which he was unaware of. All the samples taken in the homicidal gas chambers contained a quantity of cyanide, which was either unmeasurable or infinitesimal. While the sample from the disinfection gas chamber, taken for comparison's sake, contained an enormous amount of cyanide, the infinitesimal quantity detected in the former case can be explained by the fact that the supposed homicidal gas chambers were in fact morgues for preserving bodies, and such morgues have been occasionally disinfected with Zyklon B. And then, of course, you have David Irving. The British historian David Irving enjoys great prestige because Zundel thought of asking him to testify, but there was a problem. Irving was only partially a revisionist. The thesis that he defended, for example, in Hitler's War, can be summed up as follows. Hitler never gave an order for the extermination of the Jews. At least up to the end of 1943, he was kept in ignorance of that extermination. Only Himmler and a group of about 70 or so persons were aware of it. In October of 44, Himmler, who wanted to get into the good graces of the Allies, gave an order to cease the extermination of the Jews. I had met Irving in Los Angeles in September of 1983 at the annual convention of the Institute for Historical Review, where I challenged him by asking several questions about proof to support his thesis. When I published an article entitled A Challenge to David Irving in the Journal of Historical Review back in 1984 and the spring of 85, I tried to convince this brilliant historian that logically he could no longer be satisfied with a semi-revisionist position. To begin with, I challenged him to produce Himmler's order to stop the extermination, an order which never actually existed. And later on, I learned from various sources that Irving was undergoing a change that moved him in the direction of revisionism. In 1988, Zundel became convinced that the British historian was only waiting for a decisive event to take the final step in our direction. And after arriving in Toronto, David Irving discovered in rapid succession the Leuchter Report and an impressive number of documents that Zundel, his friends, and I had accumulated over the course of several years. The last reservations or the last misunderstandings melted away in the course of a meeting. He agreed to testify on the stand. In the opinion of those who were present at the two trials in 1985 and 1988, no single testimony except for that of Fred Leuchter caused such a sensation. And for more than 3 days, David Irving, engaged in a sort of public confession, took back all that he had said about the extermination of the Jews and without reservation adopted the revisionist position. With courage and honesty, he showed how an historian can be brought to revise profoundly his views on the history of the Second World War. Ernst Zundel had promised that his trial would be the trial like the Nuremberg trial or the Stalingrad trial. The unfolding of these two long trials proved him right, and even though the jury, instructed by the judge to consider the Holocaust as an established fact, which no reasonable person can doubt, according to the judge, they found him guilty. Zundel had already won. It remains for him to make it known to Canada and to the entire world. The media blackout of the 1988 trial was almost complete. Jewish organizations campaigned vigorously for such a blackout and even went so far as to say that they did not want an impartial account of the trial. They did not want any account of it at all. The paradox is that the only publication which reported relatively honestly about the trial was the Canadian Jewish News. Ernst Zundel and the Leuchter Report have left a profound mark on history. Both will be remembered for many years to come. Weber, Mark Weber, also clarified the meaning of the term, final solution, but never extermination of Jews. The Testimony of Judge Conrad Morgan, The Tortures of Rudolf Hess and Oswald Pohl, The True Story of Revisionism and the Concessions Made Year After Year by the Exterminists to the Revisionist Viewpoint. And then we get this, folks. After all that is said and done, Ernst Zundel goes home to his wife after he does his time in jail. He goes home to his wife, is kidnapped out of, I believe it was Tennessee, taken to Germany where he's tried again, and he's put in prison for 5 years in solitary confinement. And now, Holocaust denier Ernst Zundel, this is just 10 days ago, Holocaust denier Ernst Zundel is barred from moving to the United States, though his wife is an American citizen, similar to Field McConnell and his wife, who is a British citizen, who is denied entry into the United States because Field McConnell has a position about our government, about Hillary Clinton, knows too much, so they won't let him in. Do you know why they won't let him in, or they won't let Ernst Zundel in? Because those people know the truth, and they can't handle the truth. But guess what? You can handle the truth because you listen to RBN. Now, I'm done with that. I opened up the phone lines, never got a phone call. I'm assuming it's because what I just shared with you is pretty darn interesting, folks. So there's a whole mountain of evidence here that the story that we've been fed since World War II is a load of bull. Now, I'm not saying that 100% it's a load of bull. I'm saying to the other side, don't call me an anti-Semite, because I'm not. Just show me the evidence to the contrary, and please let me sit down, weigh the evidence, and make an intelligent conclusion. But guess what, folks? They won't do that. Why do you think that is? Do you think maybe, just maybe, they've got something to hide? Do you think maybe, just maybe, that they're getting so much money to continue to perpetrate a myth, which evidently it looks like it is, that, it's easier to just pass a law in a country and throw you in jail if you dare open your mouth about it. Evidently, that's the position they have taken. Would you agree or disagree? It's up to you. I'm done. Looks like I'm almost out of time, too. I'm not out of water. I need a drink. I've gone dry talking too much. Nobody called in and helped me out tonight, with the exception of Lori. Interesting girl. She's pretty smart. Okay, well, listen, folks, I hope you enjoyed this program tonight. Now, I'm not real sure what I'm going to report on tomorrow night. I may just open up the phone lines and get some input from everything that you've heard this week. And, of course, over the weekend, I've got to work on some other reports. I'm getting some interesting information regarding some of the stuff that Field told us the other night and never really had a chance to go into any depth on. So I'm probably going to read up on that, put a show or two together on it, and share that with you too. Anyway, have a good night, and I'll see you same time, same station tomorrow. Good night for now.
I'm through with doubt. There's nothing left for me to figure out. I've paid a price, and I'll keep paying.
I'm getting older and noticing that my body just doesn't work as well as it used to. So I like to keep fit as possible by hitting the gym a few times a week. Recently, I started having a nagging bicep pain, and it got so bad I couldn't even lift the weights. When I was complaining about it to a friend, he told me about Angioprim. He said chelation helps remove toxins, heavy metals, and cholesterol in veins and arteries that may cause blockages. You know, after just 1 week of taking Angioprim, the pain was gone, and now I'm back in the gym full strength. Scientific research proves the active ingredient in Angioprim has superior oral chelation action that helps promote cardiovascular health. So to learn more, go to angioprim.com. That's angioprim.com. Or talk to a trained consultant. Call Angioprim toll free at 877-882-4400. 872-7221. You'll feel better with more energy. Call 877-882-7221 or go to the website angioprim.com.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.